Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Big Sand Lake, once again. Katie's family has a tradition of coming up here to this beautiful lake in northern Wisconsin, near the border with the UP. They've been coming up here for something like 40 years, every single year for the 4th of July week, and I'm really happy and honored to be a part of this tradition, welcomed in this cabin. We go fishing every day, we relax, there's plenty of that, plenty of sleep, just great times. I almost couldn't think of a more stark contrast from Beijing. There's almost no people up here, there's a few houses on the lake, blue skies every day, mosquitoes, it's been really cool too. But obviously Beijing has its advantages, and that's where we get to today's guest. Nina Kraft is a friend from California, but she was living in Beijing when I was there. And she's one of these early adopters to Chinese expat life. She lived in Beijing in the 80s, although she was too young to remember it, as she'll explain in the podcast. But she's kind of been in and out of China off and on for much of her life. We had a great, interesting conversation about life in Beijing. And we had this talk, I think about 2 days before I moved out. And so we discussed what it's like to move. Those were some stressful times for me, but now I'm totally relaxed, as you can probably hear in my voice. Not for too much longer, though. We've only got about a month left at home. We're going to be doing a lot of running around, visiting people after this week, trying to get things all squared away for our upcoming trip around Siberia and into China and Japan. And, well, we've got a lot of fun things in store. Just trying to soak it all in while we can before we take off for the adventure of a lifetime. As far as the book is concerned, I'm still editing away, just making those final changes. It's going to come down to the wire, but I still plan to get it out before we take off, so stay tuned for that. And I should let you guys know that you can always subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. And from there, you can enter your email address and you'll never miss an update whenever I make changes to my website. Okay, let's jump into my conversation with Nina Kraft. Moving kind of sucks.
Crazy.
I'll tell you though, this is not nearly as chaotic as when I moved out of Madison. I had like four giant projects going on at once.
Oh my gosh.
Because we had moving, then we had, well, figuring out how to get to China.
Right.
And we've never been there and whatever. And I was publishing my book, and we had this, what was it? A couch crash, this couch surfing event that I was planning for this whole, my whole last weekend.
Giant party.
I was planning like half of it. And then finally I went kayaking for a week down this Whitewater River in Idaho, and I was planning to go to do that. And so
you were busy.
I was so busy, and when I moved out, I had this moving van in my garage, and I spent all night just packing everything, and I got about 10 minutes of sleep, and then drove the van to Katie's place and unloaded everything and crashed. So hopefully it'll go a little smoother this time.
Yes.
Like,
I don't think we'll have to clean much here. That's one good thing.
That is a great thing.
We'll have a housekeeper come and
yeah.
help us out with that.
Affordable.
Totally. Totally. It's a great thing. Well, you're going to stay here next year, right?
Yes, I will be here for another year.
Just one more year?
One more year.
Exactly.
I think the Beijing winters have knocked me down a bit. The cold weather, the pollution, it's not my favorite.
No, summer is probably my least favorite.
The sticky heat.
It gets so hot here. It's just like 40 degrees, 40 degrees, 38 degrees. Like,
yes.
Or in American terms, like 104.
Yeah.
Then the next day is 100. Then the next day is 100.
With humidity and mosquitoes.
And pollution.
Yeah.
And it's just brutal. But like fall is beautiful. Spring is beautiful.
True. But they're too short.
Yeah. Like I'd say half the year is actually like really nice. But then even those days you can get polluted.
I'd say a third of the year is really nice.
Okay, fine, a third. It's the city that I think it's a really beautiful city when it's nice.
Absolutely.
It's just like I look out the window and I see the mountains and all the greenery. There's so many nice parks here. It's all like really well put together. But then when the weather turns bad, it's just awful.
Right.
So it's like love or hate, you know?
It's hard to think of living here long term. But I think as far as infrastructure, Beijing has everything, you know? And the cool thing, the draw, I feel, of Beijing is that they have so much history here, so much culture. You know, you can explore anything you want to.
Yeah, that's unreal. I mean, the Forbidden City and we live right by the Lama Temple.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been there about 8 times. And that's the biggest Buddhist temple in the city. Yeah, it's just so different from the West.
Yeah.
And this is where all the biggest history is.
Mm-hmm.
So
when I was looking for jobs, I really wanted to go to Shanghai because I had heard I had been traveling in China before, but Shanghai was so cool and hip and more westernized. I knew it was like the shopping city and the nightlife. And then I didn't get a job in Shanghai. I got a job in Beijing. But now I'm really glad that I'm here because I think in Beijing you get a little bit more of the culture and a little bit more of what like a real China big city feel is.
Yeah, for sure. Shanghai, I don't know. I've only been there a couple times. I'm glad that we came to Beijing as opposed to Shanghai, actually.
Me too.
You are?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's better nightlife in Shanghai. I'm sure
it's a nice for a weekend trip, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's you know, modern and it's easy to get around. The signage seems better, too. It's like European-style signs where they show you, like,
More English. There's more Western catered things, you know, food and...
Right.
And bars, but there's no tuk-tuks. We noticed that.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
We wanted a tuk-tuk. We were like, how are we going to get around? We couldn't get a cab. And
there's no way you could actually use your legs.
Right. We could have, but not at some distances.
Some of the longer distances, yeah. The subway there, though, is really nice.
Really nice. Really easy to use, and people are very polite on the subway.
Sure.
You miss seeing the Beijing Ren with their pajamas on and, you know, loudly talking on their speakerphones.
Oh, that doesn't happen in Shanghai?
Not as much.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, here it was quite a shock when we first came here. The first thing is the doors of the train open, and if you're trying to get off, everyone else is trying to push their way on, and they won't allow you to leave first. It's like, wait, what? Like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But, I guess they kind of do it. I didn't realize this at first, but they kind of make three lines, and two lines are going out, and one is coming in, and there is a bit of a system.
It's a push and shove system.
Yes, it's a push and shove system.
I don't know how people sleep on the subway. Often people are just really out sleeping, and I'm always wondering, how do they know which stop to get off at?
That's true. Well, that's a whole other topic, is Chinese napping. Because napping happens to be a passion of mine, so
yes.
I really admire the Chinese for being able to nap
They
so
can
well.
Nap anywhere.
Anywhere. There's like whole websites dedicated to just
This is a talent I have, too, because I get sick on every public transportation, but I like to travel, so I have to take transportation. But I just sleep.
Oh,
I will
okay.
just sleep, and then I won't get sick.
You get like motion sickness?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's... that's a tough one if you're a traveler getting motion sickness.
Huh. It's a special thing to overcome.
Right. But for me too, as soon as I sit down on a bus, I'm just out cold. It just doesn't even matter like what else is happening.
Yeah. You miss the out the window scenery, but you get there a lot quicker, it feels like.
Yeah, you time travel. Mm-hmm. That's true. And good nappers are time travelers.
I like that.
Subway napping though, I find I'm actually able to sleep and kind of pay attention. It's a weird, like, you have to hone this skill. It takes a long time. Like, it started for me in high school when I would sleep through, like, my teacher speaking. And I had a perfect system of putting my head on my hand. And so it kind of looks like I'm writing something.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I'm, like, really focusing on what I'm writing. But I'm actually out cold.
I'm sure your teacher knew.
Probably.
It's probably well, like, this poor Dan, he needs some sleep.
Yeah, my grades might reflect that. But no, well, when I was a teenager, I could not fall asleep before like midnight. You know, I was a late night person, and then all day I would just struggle, and like school starts so early.
Yes.
And I needed teenagers need a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's another one. Like I've heard of some schools experimenting with actually starting later.
Yeah.
Like I think the problem is the parents want to drop them off before they go to work.
Right.
But when you're starting school at 7:30 in the morning, and my bus would come at 6:30 a.m.
Like, it's so early. Then you're waking up at 5:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're 14
years old. Then
you're
going to bed at, you know, 8 right. or 9 to get a full night's sleep.
Or, you know, I worked at McDonald's when I was 15, 16. I'd work till midnight and then
right.
come home like 12:30 in the morning. And then have to get up at 5, like, that's not going to work so well.
No.
Do the math, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd probably spend 3 or 4 hours sleeping during the day.
I think people can be adaptable, though. Maybe teenagers are less wanting to be adaptable, but I was always a night person until I became a teacher. And now I have to be a morning person out of necessity.
No choice, though.
No choice.
Right.
So I'm an early to bed, early to rise, or...
That's true. I've adapted, too, a little bit. Gotten into getting up early, but no, you know what it is though, for me, I'm still a late night person, but I sometimes I have to get up early just because Katie's a teacher,
right?
And then I'm up, and then my mornings go okay, and then all afternoon I'm just tired.
You nap?
Yeah, I take naps. But then it's weird, even though I live on the opposite side of the planet and I've had to adjust for the, you know, the time difference, it's still my body just doesn't want to go to sleep at
yeah.
night. It's like I get more and more awake as the night goes on until I just crash one minute.
Right.
So, which I guess is how you define a night owl.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then hopefully those mornings you sleep in?
Yeah, if I can. Well, now that we're school's out for the summer, I think there will be more days of sleeping in and mm-hmm. actually getting enough sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you used to live in Beijing, right? Like when you were growing up?
Yes, I lived in Beijing in the 80s, late 80s. So my dad was opening a Chinese-American bank here, First Interstate Bank. It doesn't exist in China anymore, but he was chosen by his company to come over here and start the bank, find the building, you know, start it up, make the partnerships. And his Chinese was very good, which is why they had him over here. So we all came out as a family, and I was, I think, 6 weeks old when I moved to China and lived here until about 3 years old.
Oh, okay, so you were really young then.
Yeah, I don't actually have memories of it. My sister was older than me. She can remember living here.
Oh, okay. How did your dad learn Chinese so well?
You know, he took it as his major in college. He was kind of a hippie guy and didn't know what he wanted his major to be and picked it out of a hat.
Literally? Like, just...
I believe literally, unless he's, you know, pulling my leg or something.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I guess if he had, like, 3 or 4 that were all completely equal, like, you gotta take
right.
one of these, and I don't care which it is. Huh, so did he go to China to study?
So he, I believe, lived in Taiwan earlier with
okay.
my mom. Because
yeah.
before, at that point, you couldn't live in China as a foreigner.
Right.
They wouldn't let you.
Until, like, the late...
Until the 80s.
Yeah, until the 80s. Right. There were almost no foreigners in all of China.
Right. And even when he was living here in the 80s, there were very few foreigners, very few Americans. He tells a great story about during the 4th of July, the American embassy would invite all the Americans to the embassy for a 4th of July party. And there was no Western food in Beijing at the time. So they would hire a McDonald's crew from Hong Kong to fly into mainland China to cook burgers for 4th of July.
Oh my God. So they have a gourmet McDonald's meal.
Absolutely. I'm sure they loved it too. They were missing that food.
Huh. So they flew the food in too?
Mm-hmm. Cheese. They didn't have cheese here.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, now it's like, it's so different. You can get anything you want here.
Anything, yeah.
I mean, it might be a little bit more expensive than at home if it's some weird thing that they just don't have in China, but... In Beijing, you can get, like, literally whatever you want.
Absolutely, yeah.
Huh. I mean, that's not the case in all of China.
True.
So you leave the first tier cities and it's kind of hard to find a cup of coffee. But
yeah. I studied in Xi'an in college and I lived there for like a month. And I remember we found a pizza place. We got really excited. It was called Hello Pizza. And I ordered a veggie pizza. And it was, I think, ketchup as tomato sauce.
Oh, no.
Probably like a Kraft Singles kind of cheese. And then they put broccoli, corn, and some really odd toppings. Bananas. They put bananas on the pizza.
They cooked the banana?
I was really upset. Yeah, it was not good.
That sounds horrible. It's like, let's just throw everything that foreign people might like all together, even though the flavors don't
even
match.
They didn't get it.
Yeah. I mean, that said, Chinese food is so, like, good. Like, there's just so many different types of cuisine. And
totally.
They do a great job cooking it. So, yeah, I hardly ever eat foreign food here, honestly. It's like, there's, like, Great Leap has really good cheeseburgers. So I'll go there sometimes. And there's a couple of pizza places that are, like, really, really good. But honestly, a lot of the foreign food I get here, I'm like, it's okay, but it's twice as expensive as local food. And, you know, that's like a nice restaurant.
Right. And you do definitely spend more to get foreign food. I love Chinese food, but I crave Mexican food a lot.
Yeah.
And Beijing has okay Westernized Mexican food,
sure,
but it's not great. So I'm looking forward to going back to California and having some really good, cheap Mexican food.
Right, like authentic Mexican.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess we'll have to go to this. We have this little restaurant we like in Madison that is pretty good authentic Mexican.
Yeah.
Maybe go there. Now I'm starting to think of all the like stuff, all the places I want to go.
What are you
going to
eat first?
Yeah, I'm going to eat first. It's been almost a year since we've been home, so...
It's a long time.
Yeah, a long time. How about you?
I was home last summer. Yeah, so about a year.
Same?
Yeah.
And when are you flying home?
I fly home tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't started packing.
Yeah, well, try not to do the Dan thing and stay up all night and 5 minutes of sleep.
The nice thing about America is if I forget anything, I can very easily buy it there.
Oh, yeah. And actually, you're coming back, so it's not nearly as hard.
No, not moving, so it's not too stressful.
Right. Just throw some clothes together and...
And bring gifts. My dad wants a suitcase full of the spicy peanuts, so I will bring him those.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He's got good taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For anyone listening, if you haven't had the spicy peanuts, man, I'm sure you can get them at a Chinese grocery shop, probably, but probably for 10 times more than they should cost, but they're so good. Just peanuts mixed with like red peppers and then
a spicy red pepper and then like a tongue numbing pepper.
Yeah.
If there's a little bit of a feeling that you get on your tongue when you eat them. It's spicy and I don't know.
Yeah, Sichuan peppercorn. The first time I had one of those or anything with that in it was here. I'd never had that in the States.
Right.
And I'd had this soup, like this wonton type soup with mala.
Yeah.
And I just started eating it and I'm like, oh my God, my lips are vibrating. What is going on? And I just never looked back. I was like, this is so amazing. I love this numbing feeling.
Yeah.
It's completely different than spicy.
Totally different.
Like, it's spicy, but in a totally different way.
Yeah.
So it's something to experience for sure.
So that's why they have a different name for the spicy, right? Regular spicy is la, and that tongue numbing is the mala. So they actually differentiate their spices.
Yeah, for sure. Right. And actually, Katie thinks I'm really weird because I'll just take those peppercorns and just eat them.
No way. Yeah. Oh, that is pretty baller.
It's pretty extreme.
Yeah. I try to avoid them. Like, you can still get the flavor in whatever you're eating that they're in, but I don't want to eat them.
Oh, no, I love it. Oh, we just got...
It's intense.
We just got frog last night.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to be one frog, like, in a pot, but it was a pot full of frogs.
Oh, my goodness.
I think probably 10.
Yeah, there are some interesting cuisines here to be had. I remember trying bitter melon soup and having a Chinese friend tell me, okay, well, this is one of the categories of taste is bitter. And in America, this is not really a category of taste that we have.
And yeah, bitter is like an indication that it's poisonous.
Right. I did not enjoy it. It's not.
No?
It's not something I've adapted to enjoying, that bitter melon, that bitter flavor.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird flavors.
The sweet,
here.
The sour, the spicy. I like any combination of those, but the bitter is not for me.
Nah, me either. I guess this coffee's pretty bitter, but not that extreme, you know?
No.
So you lived in Xi'an too. I forgot about that. What was that like?
It was amazing. It was totally Chinese. Like, it was a big city, but it was not westernized yet. I do remember they did have like a McDonald's, a Starbucks, a KFC, but everywhere did at that time.
Wow.
This was 2009.
Okay.
They didn't have anything else that was Western. You had to speak Chinese to get by. You could not speak English anywhere.
And did you speak Chinese?
I did, yeah. I had taken 2 years in college before that point, and then I was taking 4 hours of intensive language a day at the university.
Oh, wow, that's
so
a lot.
My Chinese was quite good then. Unfortunately, I think I've lost it now. But I mean, Xi'an, if you go now, which I haven't been back, I've been meaning to, they have a subway system, they have everything. It's, you know, a major city that could be similar to, I guess, a lesser westernized than Beijing and Shanghai, but definitely up and coming. But now they have subways, everything. Before they didn't.
Right.
We had to take bus or walk or taxi.
Yeah. But even though it's a big city, I'm sure it's bigger than New York. You know, it's at least 10 million people. But,
right.
But the very center of it is walled in.
Right.
The wall still is there.
Yes. The city center, it's a ringed city center, much like Beijing,
right.
Although Beijing's is not walled in anymore. But you can ride a bike along the top of that, and that was actually the first time I rode a bike.
Ever?
I rode a tandem bike, yes. I was on the back, and we rode for 9 miles on the city wall to get all the way around. It was really scary.
Did you actually do any pedaling, or did you just...
I did a lot of pedaling. I didn't do the steering because I was in the back, but my legs were sore afterwards.
Okay.
But it's not flat, so you're going up and down, and you're like running into pedestrians. It's a pretty interesting experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't realize that.
It's
I'm
wild.
Too cheap. I never actually paid to go up to the
right,
top.
Right, right.
But I guess it is pretty wide then, huh?
Yes,
like
it is
highway,
wide.
Like the width of a highway, I guess, or a single lane road?
At least a large road, couple lanes.
It's interesting. And it's 9 miles around, you said?
Yeah. And it's not a full square. It's kind of a jagged shape of sorts.
Ah, okay. Huh. I guess I should have done that. But inside that wall, I guess I don't know how long, it's maybe like 2 miles on each side then. Like, so within that area is most of the main attractions of the city.
Right. A lot of the main attractions fall within.
Yeah. So if you want to go visit, like, you almost don't need a subway system, you know? Like,
right. Just for if you want to do the extra things, the nightlife or anything like that, you would do probably taking the subway. There's a university district just like there is here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, the Muslim street is like, it's like one of my favorites. I've been there a few times.
Yeah.
It's just so stimulating, just the amount of music and people like making candy out on the streets.
Right.
Yeah, just
it's actually
to get
like
attention.
A celebration of a different culture, which in Chinese culture can be rare.
Yeah.
The fact that they have this Muslim quarter that is very, I mean, of course, it's a huge tourism gain for them, but it's celebrated. You know, the food, the culture, the music, it seems to be really, it's out in the open and it's part of their community.
Right. Oh, and it's just, it's not how you think of Muslim culture normally, or how I would normally.
Right. Chinese Muslim culture is unique, I think. And
right.
Xi'an's a bit diversified from just Han Chinese culture.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a super interesting city to visit for a few days.
Absolutely.
And then the Terracotta Warriors are there too.
Yes, really a cool. Little bit outside the city. It's just amazing and kind of awe-inspiring when you think that all of these soldiers were made for this one tomb, and they all are different. Each one is different. And of course, there's all this lore that I don't know if it's true or false. That they made the faces after soldiers, and then they had to actually kill the soldiers afterwards, so their souls would actually be in the soldiers protecting the tomb.
Yeah, I guess Qin Shi Huang was a little wacky and out there, so, maybe. I mean, just to have that kind of project, like, let's make 10,000 soldiers to accompany me in the afterlife.
Right. Yeah. That is a pretty strong belief in the afterlife as well, that they would have to undertake, you know, this project took, I don't know how many years, but a long time, and probably a lot of money and a lot of manpower.
Yeah, I mean, it's up there. I'd almost put it up there with the pyramids at Giza for in terms of, like, dedication and how many people it took to do it.
Right, the Great Wall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm specifically speaking of an emperor that's like, I want to be remembered or whatever. Mm-hmm. Although I guess he didn't really want to be remembered, did he? Like, it was all buried. So it's,
he really wanted protection in the afterlife.
I guess. I mean, I'm kind of talking out of my ass here. Like, I don't really know much about it, but just what I saw, it's like, because they weren't even discovered till the, like, late 70s, I think.
Yeah, completely underground.
Yeah.
And there was talk of, like, booby traps and stuff, too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how true this is.
And any curses.
Right. Chinese history is so long that it's hard to be an expert in it, I think.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah, I had this guy on, Jeremiah, who's, like, totally an expert on Chinese history. And it's crazy the amount of knowledge he's accumulated in, you know, just with this culture. Because there's just so much to learn.
Absolutely.
And I always want to learn whenever I'm talking to him. And I soak in a lot of it, but it's just hard to remember everything.
Right.
Because there's just so much.
One of my favorite pieces of Chinese history is more recent history. I've been twice now to the Shanghai Propaganda Poster Museum. This place is totally funky, really cool, but it's like in the bottom, in the, like the basement of some apartment complex. It's not really out in the open. And you go in and they kind of take you on a walk through the posters starting in like the 1940s. So China was like pushing propaganda posters out to the public. That was how they were reaching their public. And it starts out, you know, very like, the quintessential Chinese housewife, the happy Chinese family. And then you get into times of political uneasiness, unrest. And so then they're portraying people like the Americans really poorly in these cartoons. They're cartoon propaganda, just like what we had in the States back in the day. But, you know, our faces are blue with zits all over, big noses, you know, we're being kicked in the butt literally. And it was really interesting. And then you move through time more. And during the times of famine, they would have propaganda posters of families feasting to say, don't worry, China is not in a famine. Your place might be, but the rest of us are prosperous. So don't be scared. Don't be worried, which wasn't the case, actually.
Right.
Then they had the issue with pests because they killed all the birds. So then had all of these campaigns for people to be killing pests. So there was posters of this. It's fascinating, you know?
Wow. I didn't even know about this place. And it's out in the open. It's totally cool to display all this now and talk about it.
I guess so.
I guess it's far enough back that it's not sensitive anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And that's in Shanghai?
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to have to go to Shanghai on this trip coming up. So maybe we'll check that place out.
I recommend it. They have pictures of like Mao with Stalin as, the great leaders, the great world leaders. It's pretty fascinating.
Wow, that's cool. I do like how they always depict foreigners with like really big noses. Like that's
our one trait.
yeah it's interesting how other races can see foreign different races see each other in like their stereotypical ways.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I never thought of it like we all have big noses.
I suppose comparatively, our noses might be slightly bigger.
That's probably true. I got this postcard in North Korea actually and sent it to my parents, which is interesting. You can send postcards to the U.S. from North Korea.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it had some propaganda on the front of it with like a bomb hitting the U.S. or something. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, which now that I think of it, maybe it wasn't the nicest thing to send, but.
What was their response?
I thought it was hilarious. I think my parents just thought it was funny.
Yeah, good.
But I was kind of wondering if they would actually get it.
Right.
You know, if it would arrive, but I guess it made it.
Yeah. I sent postcards home from Bali, and I think they took 6 months to get home.
God.
It was a while. You never know, when you're traveling around Asia, when you send things, how long it's going to take. Sometimes it's quick, sometimes it's forever.
Sure.
Sometimes it never arrives.
Sure. Well, it's got a whole ocean to cross. And yeah, that's one thing I think I'll try to keep doing when I travel again is at least here and there send some postcards because it's fun to get those.
It is totally fun. I think people appreciate that.
Yeah. So thanks for reminding me. I sent a few people postcards from Antarctica when I went there. So that was kind of special.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's just kind of a cool feeling. Like, I mean, if I get a postcard, like, it's a piece of this other person. Like, we're almost traveling together for that moment in time.
Yeah.
10 seconds it takes to read the thing.
And it's quaint. It's old fashioned, and it takes more time to pick out a postcard, buy it, sit down and write it, put a stamp on, mail it. So it seems as if it takes more time and care. You've put more effort into it. So I think although technology is taking over, and in a lot of ways it's convenient and wonderful, it can't completely replace these old-fashioned niceties.
Not yet anyway.
Yeah.
I was in the Galapagos too, and they had a really interesting thing there with postcards. Post Office Bay it's called. And so it back like 300 years ago the sailing ships would sail there and to the Galapagos Islands, and they would stock up on supplies. And I mean, there's a whole awful, terrible history there too, where they would take these giant tortoises and just load them up on the ship, and they could live for like a year without eating anything that the tortoises could. And then, so they could have fresh meat anytime in the next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then they'd like, some of them went extinct, of course.
Yeah.
Some of them went pretty close to extinct. So they would use the Galapagos kind of as this jumping off point.
I see.
It's 1,000 kilometers off the coast. Anyway, though, on one of the islands, there's this mailbox, basically, and you could leave letters there, and if anyone was going to, like, you'd put an address on it. If anyone was going to the place where the address was, you just pick it up and take it the rest of the way.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and it still works. You can still
really?
Do it. Yeah.
So did you do it?
Yeah, although I was kind of a little bit upset because someone kind of cheated. They brought my postcard to the U.S., to wherever they lived, and then they just sent it in the mail the rest of the way.
Oh.
I'm like, no, the whole thing is you've got to, like, knock on the person's door.
Right.
And, like, say, hey, do you know so-and-so?
Do a castaway greeting,
Yeah, exactly. Like, here's this message.
Right.
I mean, that's like, the essence of it. And that did not happen, unfortunately.
Darn.
But, yeah, but I love the idea of it.
So you left a postcard. Did you take anything?
I looked through it, but I was traveling for so long. Like I think I traveled for another year after this point. So I couldn't really take anything to fly back to the U.S. right away. I could only take something if it was somewhere I was going in the near future, which was only locally. So I didn't see anything that I could actually take.
But this is a cool thing for listeners because this could be a bucket list. People could want to go to the Galapagos Islands, send a letter, bring a letter.
Yeah, well, there's so many great reasons to go there, but that's one of them. It's just, there's at least like 5 or 6, like, whoa, holy shit, like weird things about the Galapagos.
Right.
Like one would be the ships coming in and like taking the tortoises.
I can't believe that.
Just all the destruction they did.
Right.
introducing pests to the islands, and that was pretty awful. So the human side of it's is there.
Yeah.
They built a prison on the island.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can go see some of the remains of that on one of the islands. There's the natural history, the islands are all volcanic. And so there's this volcano eruption that would occur under the ocean and bubble up whatever the lava, make an island. I mean, over the course of millions of years.
Right.
And then the islands would very gradually drift from I think it's from continental drift or something along those lines. But the bubbling up would continue to happen in the same spot. So it just kind of shot up all these islands.
That's
how
cool.
I see it anyway.
Yeah, very cool.
Over the course of millions of years. And then,
right.
then the Darwin history of it, the evolution side, and all these unique animals. And the wildlife there, because there were no native humans on these islands, so the wildlife has no fear of human beings.
Right.
So, yeah, they never learned that.
Yeah.
So you can just go right up to them and you're not allowed to pet the animal, but they don't fly away.
But I wanna.
Yeah, I'd say they're actually pretty good about conservation now.
That's great. Because important.
Yeah, there's a giant tax when you go there. It's $100. So as soon as you get there, they take $100 from you, and that goes to the park.
Oh wow!
And then I think it's 98% of the islands are national park.
That's
so they're
so
highly
cool.
Restricted. And
yeah.
Even when I went on the tour, I did this boat trip around a few of the different islands. They were very clear. You have to stay on the paths. You can't just go up and grab a bird and talk to it or anything.
Grab a bird and talk to it.
Yeah, if
that's
you
what
talk
you
to
were
it,
gonna
you
do.
You have to do it from afar, meditate, send your signals through the air.
You can't use carrier pigeons.
Telepathy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no carrier pigeons. That'd be cool if you could just take a Bluefoot booby and strap a message to it and send it away.
That could be the new Galapagos letter system.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think the folks who mushrooms might come up with some kind of idea like that. Anyway, at one point we were walking through one of these paths, and this woman I was next to just took her water bottle and put a little bit of water in the cap. And just held it out for a bird to come and take, and she got reamed out for doing
really?
That. Yeah, you do not give the animals any water.
Good. I think that's important to adhere to those rules. When I was in Chengdu, we were allowed in the when we went to see the giant pandas, there was a red panda park, and you're allowed to actually walk through it to be with the red pandas. So there's pathways. And you're not supposed to bring any food or drink in there. They have a specific diet. And there was a Chinese woman who had a bag full of apples, and she basically was taunting a red panda. It was jumping up, wanting the apples, and she was pulling it up, putting it down, trying to tease this panda, and it almost attacked her. And I was furious because I really think it's important to follow these rules. They're there for a reason. And I told the guard in the very basic Chinese that I have now, he didn't do anything.
Oh, really? I mean, those red pandas are vicious too.
They can be.
They're like raccoons.
Right.
I mean, yeah. So I wouldn't have felt too bad for her. She got attacked. I actually shot a short video there of all these people taunting red pandas, just hey, look at me, hey, I want to take a picture of you, hey.
Aww.
And I just kind of panned the camera around, and there's a sign right behind these people that says, please keep quiet,
yes.
Or something like that. They just don't follow those rules.
No, but it is interesting. You were saying that the Galapagos has a lot of nature reserves. They preserve their nature really well. And I'm surprised by how many UNESCO heritage sites are in China. You look at the pollution and you think, wow, I don't know how well they take care of, this part of the world. And then you see these amazing heritage sites that are actually pretty well kept.
Yeah.
We went to Panjin earlier this year.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that was just amazing to me that's something that exists, and they're quite careful, I think, about how they treat that land.
Sure. It's really good though that, I mean, tourism has pluses and minuses, but when there are that many tourists going to a place, at least the the government or whoever's going to run the place realized, like, okay, we got to take care of this stuff. If we just destroy it all, no one's going to come see it anymore.
Right.
So I think that's part of what has happened in the Galapagos. It's the most prosperous state in Ecuador. And I think the government there just understands, like, this is a giant tourism draw on top of being, like, extremely unique. Like, there's nothing else like it in the world as far as ecosystems.
Right.
Almost all that wildlife is endemic. And if it goes away, it's just, it's gone. It's extinct.
Right.
So it's super important. But yeah, Panjin, I had no idea that this, what is it called? Sueta salsa?
Yes.
I think it's called this red
plant.
So
we thought it was red algae, but it's not algae, it turns out. It's a red plant that grows in water.
And yeah, it's just
only
bizarre.
A few times a year, or maybe just one time of year when we went.
Right.
Just makes the whole sea bright red. I've seen nothing like it before.
Yeah, it's weird, like, how many red things are there in nature, you know, red plants or... Yeah, so totally unlike anything I've ever seen.
Like a sea of red flowers, almost. Not flowers, but red plant, I guess.
Right. Now, were you on one of the bikes that we rented?
I was on a three-person bike. That was an adventure.
I mean,
that was really difficult. A two-person bike is not as difficult as a three-person bike.
Oh, it's like orders of magnitude. It's just, it jumps up a lot in difficulty. You cannot steer those things.
No.
It's like one of those semis in Australia that have like the road train where they've got like six trailers in a row and the semi. And those things don't turn fast.
Right.
And I don't think the people really got it. Like the people walking around, like, we're driving down the road on our bikes, and people would walk in front of us, like, guys, I can't move. I can't just swerve out of your way.
Right, there's not a lot of turning. Those bikes are really long. And then the other challenge is that you all have to be pedaling at the same time. So you have three separate people having to get into a rhythm. It's hard to start off. That's the hardest part, I think.
Right. Yeah, very hard. I forget what happened there. Like, we took taxis to get there, but then... Oh, I think most people go on a tour.
Yes.
And we just didn't really have that option anymore.
Right.
Oh, I think maybe they wouldn't let the taxis inside of the park. So, and I can't remember if you could just sign up for a tour there or not, but
we decided the bikes would be the most fun option.
I probably looked at the bikes and went, oh, this looks fun. I mean, it was.
It was fun.
In the end.
Yes.
But at first I was like, uh-oh.
One of the craziest places in China I've been because most of those people had never seen foreigners.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is so common when you go to a big tourist draw, like somewhere in China, because they're not Beijingers.
Right.
Like, people in Beijing are just totally used to seeing foreigners.
Totally used to us, yeah. But here they were grabbing us, pulling us, wanting our pictures. But almost, I was almost feeling as though I was being treated as not a human anymore, just as like a thing.
Yeah.
You know, they really, like, they were so grabby and forceful, and not one person asked to take my picture.
Oh, yeah, that's not a thing.
It's not a thing. I'm sure you got a lot because of your height.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. I usually just go with it, you know, I don't really get mad. The one time I did was I was in this little town at this festival with Katie, and this guy, I mean, I was just, like, talking to some new Chinese friends I had just met. We were just kind of discussing where we're going to walk. And this guy just came up and just very slowly took out his phone and, like, unlocked it, like, 3 feet from me. And then he just kind of held up the phone right to my face as I'm, like, talking to somebody and, like, tried to take my picture. And I'm, I just kind of, like, walked right up to his phone so he couldn't actually take a picture of me. And then he's like, oh, that's weird. This thing just walked toward my phone. I better move back a few steps so I can still take a picture of it.
Right.
And... Finally, one of the Chinese people, like, friends we were with, said, like, please don't take his picture. And I eventually was like, look, it's okay. Just, how about you just ask if it's okay to take my picture?
I don't usually mind. I think that's part of living in China is people are going to take your picture and people are going to stare. And that's socially appropriate here. But I do try to catch them so I can do a pose, you know, do the peace sign and smile. And they think that is very funny.
Yeah, or, like, it's a little bizarre. Like, you really just want a picture of just me? Like, if you saw Brad Pitt walking down the road, would you just take a picture of Brad Pitt? Or would you, like...
Well, this is how I felt in Panjin. They were really grabby. This is the only place I've been in China. Like, they would pull me into their picture. Okay. And I was like, this must be what a celebrity feels like. Yes, like, I'm sure people are just grabbing them all the time for selfies. And, you know, China's the land of selfie sticks. So, that's what happened.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Like, they want me in the picture with them, or you.
But if you're going to take a picture with me and put your arm around me, maybe you should ask.
Yeah. I don't know. They're not, like, mean, though. That's the thing I like. They're just so nice. And, like, I don't know. I just kind of roll with it.
Right. I just think it's funny. Are they going to put this in their family album? Yeah, who's like, that lady? Don't know.
Yeah. Just some random beast I met walking down the road.
Why Guoren?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I wonder if it's like a prestige thing. Like, do you guys know what happened? I met a foreigner.
Maybe.
Look at how cool I am now, because I met a foreigner.
Right. I mean, Panjin seemed quite small to me.
Yeah.
Like, not a major city, not a place where foreigners would come to do business, not a place where there was a lot of foreigners even traveling for tourism.
Right.
So...
I do remember there, though, the roads were so nice. It was like, it's almost like they built the city just to be like, to hold 10 times more people than it actually held.
Right.
Because there's these giant boulevards, like 6 lanes wide and almost no traffic. It's like, oh, this is so much better than Beijing. Like, never, there's no traffic jams ever.
So they must be anticipating growth there.
Yeah, maybe.
That was the place it was hard for us to get a hotel.
Oh, that's right. That's the first time that happened. Yeah, where the explanation I've gotten now that I think is correct is that there's this kind of old relic of a law that you have to register wherever you go. Anywhere you stay as a foreigner, you need to register, or even as a Chinese person. And like, most hotels just do it for you, so you don't even know that that's happening. And some of these hotels don't have the right computer system or something. Like, they're not capable of registering foreigners.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. That might not be entirely accurate. It might be a Guanxi thing. It might be, like, you need, like, the right connections to be able to register foreigners. I don't know.
Or it might cost them money to register us.
It might cost them money. There might be a tax they have to pay.
Yeah.
But...
they might think time off on, you know?
Yeah, right.
Too much trouble.
But for some reason, this just happens from time to time in China. Like, and it seems to be like concentrated in certain towns that I've gone to. Sometimes I've gone to, every hotel can take foreigners. And then sometimes, like, the only one you can stay in is the 5-star resort hotel. And every other hotel, even though they're it's not like they're shitholes, they're pretty nice places, but they just won't take foreigners.
Right.
And that can just be infuriating. And you might even say, like, well, why don't you just, like, reserve a room beforehand? Well, because they still might not be able to take you, even if you have it reserved.
Right. Yeah.
And then you might say, well, why don't you just get an Airbnb? And we've tried that, and we've actually gotten denied from Airbnb.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, not always, but it has happened. So my worst night was right after Panjin, because at least in Panjin, we... found a hotel.
We did eventually find a hotel.
We negotiated a fair, like, price. It wasn't too bad.
No.
But then right after that, I split up from you guys. You guys went back to Beijing. I went to Dalian, and I got there at like 10 p.m. and I wanted to leave on the ferry in the morning to cross the strait. And so I didn't want to venture too far from the downtown area, and I just went to hotel after hotel after hotel, and no one would take me.
Oh no.
Except the Hilton, and you know, it's gonna cost a couple $100s a night.
Right.
I'm like, no, I'm not staying there. And I found it after like an hour of this, I found a youth hostel. I'm like, okay, there's gotta be an international youth hostel, they'll have to take foreigners, right? So I found it at like the HI place. Walked to that, it took like 45 minutes to walk there, and I'm like, it's just on this dark street, no lights anywhere. I'm like, where the hell is this place? And finally, I found it. Completely closed, just lights out, no one there. Knocked on the door, like no one answered.
Yeah.
And so I like looked behind the place, and there was just this empty parking lot there. And I'm like, oh, I guess this is my home for the night. So I just
camped out.
Yeah, I camped out. I just slept slept next to this garage door because it started to rain too.
Like, do you have a tent or a mattress or anything?
I had my, I didn't want to blow up my air mattress. I think okay. I had one, but it was on a parking lot.
You were homeless for a night. Drifting.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's a good thing to kind of experience that for a night.
Yeah.
Like how hard it is to sleep in that environment and just with bugs biting you and when it starts raining. And,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's brutal.
So. We were nervous. My last trip was Inner Mongolia.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on a tour group, and we were going from the grasslands to the desert. We're on the highway, and this is already a 4-hour drive or something, and our tire pops on this bus. And so they pull over, they go to get the spare, but the spare is also popped.
Oh, man.
Which justified logic to me. If you're a tour company, you think that you would have, make sure that you have a spare tire when you're doing long drives, taking lots of people with you.
You would think, yeah.
But no. So we very slowly drive to a place that might be able to give us a tire. We get to this place, they don't have a tire that fits a bus, so they work to patch the tire. And so we're there for a few hours, they're patching the tire. We get back on the road to get to the desert. And then it was wonderful. You know, we rode camels, we did dune sliding. And then we're realizing, okay, there was a lot of tour groups here earlier and the jeeps come in and out of the desert to bring people in and out. And we haven't seen a jeep in a while. We're the only group left in the desert. So our tour guide is calling them.
Oh, they just didn't show up.
They did not answer, did not show up. So we're thinking for a while, like, wow, we're gonna be stuck in the desert, like in the middle of the desert without any of our stuff. Because our stuff was on the bus.
All right.
And the bus couldn't get into the desert. So there was a momentary freak out. Eventually a jeep came, which was great, and we got out of the desert, and then we had fun adventures such as, you know, trying to take one highway and realizing it closed at 9 p.m. and then having to go around to an alternate highway. So I think in China, you have to look at any trip you're going to take as an adventure. There's always going to be something that happens, and you have to bring your sense of humor.
Yeah, expect the unexpected.
Absolutely.
Even if you call ahead to places, it doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
I mean, I just went with this local company, joined them on a tour, I was kind of like a chaperone with a bunch of kids, and we went to the Great Wall to Jingshaling. And we know sometime in the next few months, they're going to start remodeling it and they're going to close the whole thing. And so every day this group was just calling, are you guys open today? Yes. Like, there's no schedule. Like, they don't have a date. Here, we'll close
right.
on, like, June 18th. It's, like, sometime this summer we're going to close, and then you just won't be able to come.
Right.
So on the morning that we were going to go, they called. They said, are you guys open today? We're bringing a big tour group with, like, you know, 50 kids, 75 kids, and two buses. Can we come there? Like, oh, yeah, we're open. No problem. So we got out there. We got, like, a mile from the entrance. The road was closed.
Oh, no.
The place was open, but the road was closed. And the person on the phone didn't think to tell them, like, that, you know, oh, they might need this other information. It's not exactly what they asked for.
Right.
But this might be actually relevant information for them. Nah, it wasn't a huge deal, but we had to drive around the whole mountain range and go. There was another entrance.
Okay.
But it was, like, another half an hour, 45-minute drive just because...
Right.
Because there's no, like, tunnels, you have to just drive around the whole thing.
Yes.
So, just things like that. Just super common in China.
Yeah.
And like you said, you got to bring your sense of humor.
And your patience.
You got to have patience. I mean, that said, it's... I think things tend to be a lot more organized in China than certain other countries, like India. It's just...
Right.
Way crazier.
Right. I was in India this year as well, and... The thing that struck me was that we couldn't get cash out of the ATMs. I didn't bring any rupees with me. And we get to the airport and I'm asking, oh, where's the ATM? And they're like, oh, it's right there, but there's no money in it.
All
and I was
right.
like, oh, okay. Right. So luckily one of my travel companions had cash. So we got a taxi to our hotel And the next day we're looking around for an ATM. I think we had to go to at least three or four before we found one that actually had money in it that we could take out. But it was a struggle our whole trip to have cash.
Yeah, I had a similar experience too, just finding an ATM with money in it. But now, when did you go?
I was there in February.
Of this year?
Yes.
Oh, and so was the money system kind of stabilized? Because, well, basically, like, last year, maybe in the fall, just out of nowhere, the government just said, we're getting rid of all the 1,000 rupee notes, and I think all of the 500s, too.
Right.
And you've got, like, a week to turn them all in and exchange them for new notes.
Right.
And after that, they're worthless. And, like, it's a cash-based economy. A lot of people don't have, like, bank accounts. They just keep their money in a pillow sack or whatever, and that's their life savings.
Yeah.
And, like, in a week, that's all going to be gone. And what do you think happened? Of course, there's, like, this mad scramble to change all the money in.
Right.
And there wasn't enough
of the new money.
Or, so how was it when you were there?
I mean, I would guess that that's part of why the ATMs didn't have cash, you know? Yeah. But it was interesting. We would go into the ATMs, and there would be guards there. Mm-hmm. And we'd go and try to, and they wouldn't say anything. We'd go and try to use the ATM, and it would have no money in it. And then the guards would tell us, like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, by the way, there's no money.
Right. And then it's like, then why are you standing here also?
Yeah, what's like, oh, I thought
point?
You were here
You're
for
guarding a nothing.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if, I'm assuming that had something to do with the ATMs not having money in them.
It'd be funnier if the guards said, like, oh, yeah, there's no money in it because somebody just robbed us while we were standing here.
That would be funny.
Could be. So, were there, like, do you remember, were there 1,000 rupee notes anymore? Or
I don't remember.
I'm just curious how this panned out.
Right.
It just seems so chaotic. And it was like a month or two after I left.
It sounds like something China would do.
Yeah, I mean, a few... this has happened from time to time in history.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it happened in North Korea, actually. Like, after the... during the famine in the 90s, the government couldn't completely control the food supplies. I mean, there wasn't enough public food. So people started coming up with creative means to get stuff they needed. So these open free markets started opening up, and they were technically illegal but highly tolerated at the time, because
right.
What else are you gonna do? And then so there was kind of like this free market economy that was coming into place. And then one day, once the food situation stabilized, one day the government just said, okay, we're redoing the money, and you've got a couple days to turn all your money in. The same kind of thing.
Right.
And after that, it's worthless. And by the way, everybody only can turn in a certain amount, like, and it's a tiny amount. And so basically all the people who had started to kind of like build some wealth for themselves immediately just found themselves poor again.
Oh,
yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
It is. Yeah. I mean, again, that's the story as I remember it.
Right.
Maybe there's more details that I'm
forgetting. Well, it makes me think of the bricking that's happening in Beijing. You know, I mean, on the bright side, Beijing's a city that when they put their mind to something, they get shit done.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen things built so quickly in my life.
Totally true.
In the U.S., things take forever, right? Maybe almost too long. But they have decided to beautify Beijing, essentially. So there's situations of closing down restaurants, knocking down homes, you know, changing entire areas in the city to build walls that they think look nicer than what was there before.
Yeah. Yeah. And in some cases, I think they do. They do look nicer. I mean, I think the end result will be pretty good, but just it's just so startling how quick, like without warning.
And all over. You know,
yeah,
they've just made this decision and then they just go for it. And all these different pockets of the city have been affected.
Right.
You know, the most upsetting, of course, was our friends losing their home, having to move in 2 days.
Yeah, our friends just got told, okay, you have to leave tomorrow. You have to move your whole, tomorrow.
Your apartment will be knocked down.
Yeah, it'll be knocked down. Now, that being said, I think they had put up a sign on the door in Chinese, and our friends just hadn't gotten it translated or whatever. They didn't think it was a big deal.
But you'd think the landlord, the agent, someone would let them know.
You would think someone would, but apparently the landlord didn't know either.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, they were like, or they called their agent, I think, and said, hey, is this true? We have to leave tomorrow? And because, like, the lady who sells fruit on the street just told us that. That's, like, how they found out.
Right.
We have to leave tomorrow? And he's like, no, you don't have to leave tomorrow. What are you talking about? And then he hung up, got another phone call, like, half an hour later, like, yeah, pack your shit and get out of there. Like,
oh,
you have to leave tomorrow.
Gosh.
It's for real. I know. And you just have to be prepared for, like, anything. Anything can happen here.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, like, now I walk down Ghost Street, like, where we live, mm-hmm. and it looks so much nicer than it used to. They've really made a lot of great improvements. But, yeah, sometimes the methods just seem harsh compared to anything we would be used to.
They did this to a corner of my street, not the whole street, but a corner of it, took away all the shops and restaurants and built a really beautiful wall, actually. They painted it. They put in Chinese windows. It looks great. But apparently they didn't give the shop owners any notice.
Wow.
And they can do this, apparently, legally at any time, because the Beijing government still, I guess, owns all the leases to the land.
Yep,
I don't know all the details. But now they are rebuilding some of these businesses inside the wall. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, your neighborhood just kind of, it doesn't have any, like, hole-in-the-wall places anymore.
No. It's a bummer.
Yeah, it's kind of totally gentrified now.
Right.
It's like Sanli Tun's kind of, like, expanding and... Are you going to stay in the same spot?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of, like, really nice establishments near you.
Yeah, I mean, for a Westerner, there's a lot of foreign... There's a foreign grocery and foreign food, you know, at the tip of my fingers. What I like is that I can walk in 15, 20 minutes to Dongjimin to get the hole in the wall kind of stuff, or be by the subway, or walk a good 15 minutes into the heart of Sanli Tun and get, you know, my nightlife and my mall and...
Yeah.
Whatever I need.
You're like bridging
two worlds. I feel centrally located, you know. I figured out the bus system so I can take bus. But yeah, I like to walk around Beijing too.
Yeah, totally. And this neighborhood's more, this is Dongjimin. This is much fewer foreigners. They still do have a lot, but, you know, not as many anyway.
Right.
I like it here too. Anyway, how long have we been going for, do you think?
I don't
know. About an hour.
But I guess we will probably go get some of that authentic food.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We're setting up a lunch here. We got, like, everybody's kind of taking off in the next day or two, so this is kind of a big goodbye lunch. So
yes.
We don't want to miss that. So we should wrap it up here.
All right.
Well, thanks for coming on, Nina.
Thank you so much.
It's been an awesome discussion.
Definitely.
Thanks once again to Nina Kraft for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. As usual, I have many more great shows coming up on this podcast, so feel free to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And I'd really appreciate it if you'd give me a like or a thumbs up or whatever they're doing nowadays on those social media sites. And if you could leave a review for me, that would be awesome and help to spread the word about this podcast. All right, that's all for now, folks. See you next week.